हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
जय
जानी ताय सो इज द रूपनुग विद्यापीठ going to chant some, say something. Okay.
No, Maharaj.
Not reading.
Somebody else can read, Maharaj. Actually, I just opened my laptop and then I'm going to re-log in myself also to the laptop.
I could read. Hopefully the connection's okay up here.
It should be so far.
If not, there's... Okay. In Srila Prabhupada's Udhriti, which is his commentary to 1.5.15, shall I read the verse again, 1.5.15, so we have context?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, 1.5.15. You have created a great disturbance by teaching a condemned subject to people attached to material enjoyment in order to make them accept Dharma. Thinking that what you taught them is real Dharma, they do not consider giving it up. So then continuing the Udhriti, a patient suffering from a particular type of malady is almost always inclined to accept eatables which are forbidden for him. The expert...
Yeah, guaranteed.
The physician does not make any compromise with the patient by allowing him to take partially what he should not take at all. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that a man attached to fruitive work should not be discouraged from his occupation, for gradually he may be elevated to the position of self-realization. This is sometimes...
go ahead. So this is the point that's there. It's consideration. So... that one just brings one to that platform and leaves it without taking people beyond that, then that's, you know, no glorification, no glory. You can say, is he like we were saying the other day, sometimes the soft preachers are saying, oh, well, we'll just bring him to the mode of goodness. It's a step forward. But the problem is then in the mode of goodness, then they get conditioned to material, you know, what's called material happiness. And then they like that and they don't want to give that up for endeavor in Krishna consciousness. So you haven't necessarily established them. I mean, it's because it's not our business to do that. Already the modes of nature, material energy is already doing that by taking them through the suffering of karma and the cycle of birth and death. And so then our business is to connect them to Krishna. That's what's the association of Vaishnavas for. It doesn't say the association of Vaishnavas is then to situate you in Dharma and leave it at that. Because in here, they say mode of goodness, but what our duties are being performed, right? What is the duties that are being taught? No, they just do a little yoga and push their nose a little bit and breathe a little bit and sit in an asana. But how is that situating someone in the duties of goodness? You know what I'm saying? Because they're doing all that for their own benefit. So it's in the mode of passion. So it looks like the activity might be, it's just like being in the forest, living there is the mode of goodness. But the monkeys also live there. The other animals live there, and they're simply in ignorance doing whatever they do on the bottom platform. So just because you create the situation doesn't mean the person got there. So here, Vyasadeva, with the idea to bring them to real Dharma, Sad Dharma, he's trying to establish them in Dharma. But then they will take it that the Dharma itself is Sad Dharma. Like you'll see, is that it's a standard idea that if you're being good, you're being nice, then you're religious, you're spiritual. you know, that he gave up something of himself and sacrificed to others. It's spiritual, but it's just a nice thing. You know, it's the duties you're supposed to do like that. And so, and the religious person will do that. So it's a nice thing. He's doing that. And then it's being thought that, yes, I'm being spiritual, when they're not, you know. Or you go out and you sit in nature and then breathe in the you know, the fresh air, look at the scenery, you know, that unfolding landscape. And there's that moment where it's just so nice and wonderful. We'll take it. That's a spiritual experience. When in actuality, we think it's all those trees and this and that and the wind and the water that's creating that. So it's not spiritual. Even though you're appreciating the potency of how Brahman is so perfect and wonderful and balanced and creates everything so nicely. So therefore, we're thinking that it's nice. But in actuality, it's not. It's not that. It's spiritual because we're not seeing the actual spiritual point of the Lord and how he pervades everything. He's the existence of everything. And therefore, any experience we gain, that's coming from Krishna. So it's not a spiritual experience. So the problem here comes is that Vyasadeva, like, you know, is a standard thing. He's taking that role, is that we take it from ourselves and then try to elevate it up. Rather than we take it from Krishna, and our relationship, and bring it down to what's our relationship with Krishna? What's the relationship of everything we're working with connected to Krishna? Right? So therefore, preaching actually means descending. You can use the ascending, but it's going to be more troublesome and less effective. And we see, as Narad Muni points it out, it doesn't seem to be overly effective at all. Right? You know, so that's the problem that comes up, is that people will just take those things and think, because I'm doing that, then it's done. You know, the temple president or the other senior devotees, they've been there for some years in the temple, and now, you know, they got their morning program down. They know when they get up, when they do this, when they turn on this, when they do that. You know, it's all a routine. They have it all happening. They got this spot where they chant. They got all those things. And so for 3-4 years, that's going to keep them busy. But after 3-4 years, then they're going to need something else, because now that's done. Now what do they do? Right? So the contemporary thing is just get into self-help and management and this and that and somehow another. But so that's the problem. As Vyasadeva's put it at that, he's given them that. They'll do that and they think that that's good. Now then that's all right. Now they'll get into, you know, making their money and their prestige and this and that and so many things. And so it won't actually bring about any real dynamic or proper upliftment. So that's the problem that'll come up from this. So one has to see is that only if you are it means when you're conscious of that descending process, and conscious, so that means we're conscious of Krishna and ourselves and the material world and how it's all connected to Krishna. Then when we take up that understanding and all that, then it's going to become good. Then it's going to become proper. Right? Then it's going to be dynamic. So that's why you see Bhagavatam right here in second canto. I mean, in first canto, second chapter, you know, after it's been introduced what's going on, then immediately the instructions are about the transcendental position, our relationship with the Lord, that process, that relationship being applied properly in bhakti. You know, so all that is being established immediately. Then only after that, then we get into details of, okay, what is the position of the Lord as the avatars? And then what's the position of Abhideya? We see now in this teachings of Narada Vyasadeva. Then we'll see, you know, practically applied, you know, in the Pandavas' lives and all that until, you know, we have Purkit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. So all these different aspects are, it's starting off that here is the absolute truth. That's the first thing. Then after that, then we can start getting into detail, right? So there has to be that understanding of something that connects it up to the absolute, at least in our minds. And then we're trying to explain it to the individuals that we're explaining it to. But otherwise, if we just start off with this, be nice, be good, and all that, then, you know, you can end up with you know, a lot of people will be interested, right? but do they have any, you know, what's the Abhideya for a Christian these days? There's 2 billion Christians. What's the Abhideya? What is the philosophy? What's their relationship with God? Who are they? What, you know, they say, okay, well, you know, okay, but what's the soul? Can they explain? What's God? Can they explain? Like this. So that's the difficulty, is that it's just be nice, be good. And that's when they're feeling sentimental. Otherwise, that's not necessarily that they're being nice and being good. You know, so that kind of aspect has to be appreciated, that Narad Muni is already clearing the way. It's like, okay, we've had the introduction, done all the things. Then in the second verse, then, you know, it's explained about that, you know, it's only about pure devotional service. Everything else is kicked out. So Kaitava Dharma means if you're performing Dharma without its connection to the primary Dharma or Sad Dharma, that's cheating. So then its second chapter then immediately explains that. Then explains the Lord, you know, and then gets into the details of how this works, that this cheating religion or practicing religion without the primary, without its focus on the primary, doesn't mean, yes, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. It means the two have to be seen together, right? That has to be seen. Then it has some real value. Then it has some real meaning. Does that make sense? Yes.
May I ask one question?
Yes, please.
Question is about soft preaching. Guru Maharaj, if we will compare the way of dealing with the paravidya of Christian and Indian traditions, we can see that in India, the disadvantage was that they put secondary things instead of primary. And the advantage was that they saved Varnashrama culture and they follow to the rules and regulations.
Yes.
The Western way, it was another positive situation. The disadvantage was the regulations of Moses laws, yes. But the advantage was that they saved faith. The tantra, like magic and astrology and all other things. And if we will see modern soft preaching, it means that we took disadvantages from both of the sides and we rejected the advantage. It means we reject rules and regulations of Varnashrama Dharma, but we took the secondary things like astrology, tantra, Indian tantra and other things. It's very popular nowadays. Does it mean that we're in a worse situation?
Basically, because we don't see that there's more and more. Like someone was the other day was telling me, they were talking about, you know, what's going on now, and they say that the amount of people that used to get initiated in 1 year before in their yatra, now it's that many is getting initiated in 10 years. So in other words, the you know, at least those committing to Krishna consciousness and identifying themselves as serious devotees has dropped, you know, to 1/10 of what it was before. You know, so the it means the how you say there's a saying in English, the test of the pudding is in the eating. You know, so the dessert, you know if it's good or not when you taste it. And they look fabulous, you know. I mean, like desserts, they tend to dress them up and to make them look the nicest. But it's actually when you taste it, because someone will say, "Wow, look, it's such a nice dessert." But it's only when you taste it you can tell is it actually a nice dessert. So the point is that the concept of soft preaching and where you're considerate of the people that you're talking to and want to talk in a way they can appreciate, that's the strong part of this soft preaching. But that's where it stops, because the methods, like you said, are taking the worst of both, you know. And but at the same time, it's the hard preaching that I don't know if anybody even does that these days, but the hard preaching is that they would be considering just straight Krishna consciousness, but not really considering the audience other than they're all souls and servants of God. And then preaching, but whether the people actually catch it or not is another thing. Though what would happen is most of the time people would be impressed by their conviction. You know, their faith, their conviction, their dedication. And because of that, they could relate to that. And so today people don't have an idea of faith and conviction and dedication and like that. They won't appreciate this kind of preaching because they just don't have the character. Well, before, people had that kind of character. And so even though they couldn't relate on their day-to-day level, they could relate on that character level. So the actual then preaching, you know, as Narad Muni is pointing out, is that you're starting from God, and then their position wherever they are and who they are. I mean, so it's God, their position as servant of God. Then you bring it down to how they and their position can connect. That's where then the Varnashram comes in. That's where regulation comes in. And, you know, these other secondary kind of religious aspects, secondary, tertiary, and all that. So then it becomes very strong, because then they can see, one is that the consistency, the logic that is presented, then it presented nicely, then it also that faith, that conviction, that dedication. And at the same time is that drishtanta, they're making it practical for you, so then you can actually appreciate and apply it in your life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Anything else, or no? Okay, so then we can continue reading, please.
This is sometimes applicable for those who are only dry empiric philosophers without spiritual realization. But those who are in the devotional line need not be always so advised, end quote. Then Jiva Goswami continues. Then Narada says, Tyaktva svadharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajan apakvo tapatet tato yadi yatra kvavabhadram abud amusyakim kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata. If a person, having given up his duties in Varnashrama, begins the worship of the Lord's lotus feet and happens to deviate or not reach perfection, there is no misfortune for him at all in the future. But what does the person who follows all duties of Varnashrama but does not worship the Lord gain? Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:17.
Yes, so here you see the comparison is that the primary, even if you don't perfect it, you've lost nothing. You've only gained. And the secondary, then if you only follow that but haven't followed devotional service, what have you actually gained? Even if it's done very nicely so that on the material platform, you seemingly have got the facilities and the prestige and the authority that comes along with that practice. But what have you gained? Because when you die next lifetime, you can't take it with you. You know, like that. You've performed some religious activities, nice, but all that facilities is gone. You have to start all over again. You know, and then the thing is you have attachment for those facilities that you spent a lifetime developing. And but then now you have a taste for that. Now you want it when you're a kid. And are you following or are necessarily going to be following? Because if the thing is about your stuff, then it's not going to be about your dharma. You know, the time of death, is the guy going to be thinking about, oh, how I can't carry on my duties in Varnashram? Or is he going to be thinking, oh, I'm leaving my family, my facilities, the land, the house, my position, my money. And so then next lifetime, that's what he's going to be thinking about. And so he'll have to be trained to even think of dharma. Now, how much is developing? His attachment is more now. And so then he may use, inappropriate ways to get his facility. Then how he's going to benefit. So ultimately, there's what's the real benefit? So that's why this religious platform, as taking that as the main platform, then it's not going to go well. And here, religious means we're talking about God's laws. So let alone if it's we're just following, you know, modern politically correct social norms, that is even less, you know, going to give you any benefit. At least the Varnashram will give you some benefit this life and some piety for next life, but still the soul gets nothing from it. But if you're using these others, it's no guarantee you'll get anything this life. I mean, who's getting? You know? Yes, please. Jagadish has something?
Udhriti, Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, Maharaj. I just thought that when, and I've seen it, when people preach yoga or so-called goodness, they always do it from the position of pride because it's a preaching in the modes of nature. And when devotees preach Krishna consciousness, well, sometimes they are actually in the same kind of a position, which is not the best, but at least, you know, when we develop that mood of Trinada Pisu Nichana, then, because it's a value, but otherwise for others, it's not at all. So this is the main fault also.
Yes, yes. Because that point is the pride will always spoil, because pride comes from ignorance. So as soon as you add ignorance, even to sweet rice, you know, it means the sand, it's going to create a problem. But of the two, the person who's proud and, you know, Krishna conscious is better situated than the person who's proud and politically correct. You know, but the point is that pride will be the weakness in both, because you won't get as far. You won't understand as much. You won't understand the rut you're in the political correctness, and you won't understand the distraction you're in on the, you know, from the mode of goodness, you know, if you're following the Vedic. So that's why Narad Muni's pointing out is that it's a waste of time. It's completely distracting the people. He's not just saying it. He's not saying it in a pleasant, well, you know, it's nice and that, but, you know, there's a little bit more. He's not doing that. He's just saying that you're presenting this. They will take this as Sad-Dharma, and therefore they will never come to the platform of Sad-Dharma. Because it's just like nowadays, people read Mahabharata. How many think of Mahabharata and think of the Pandavas coming to the platform of pure devotional service and surrender to Krishna? Who thinks that? You know, name me one Hindu. Just one. You know, so that's the whole point. Or you even have like Tulsidas Ramayana. He talks about, you know, merging into the existence of Ram after the whole thing. You know, so it's just like, what a waste. You know, they just don't know what they're talking about. You know, they just don't know. So that's the point is that unless you're talking about pure devotion, it's really not up to the standard. Means if you can see all these different things, you're saying, oh, but somebody's involved, but you're seeing in context of pure devotional service, then it has some meaning. But if you're not seeing it in the context of pure devotional service, then you're just seeing it, oh, it's nice, it's good, it's better than nothing. You know, I mean, you know, how much have you done? You know, it's just like if you sit down next to somebody and let's say, you know, something hurts real bad and you kiss it and make it better. Okay, nice. You know, it's on the emotional platform, but it doesn't necessarily do anything for the thing. So that's what's going on nowadays. Well, if you just make them feel better, then that's all right. Rather than, you know, give them the absolute. You know, if you can't give them the absolute, at least you deal nicely. Yes, but that's if you can't. But here we're talking about, you know, possibly we won't give. It's a matter of we're willing to give it, but they're not willing to take. Then we, you know, just keep it pleasant. But if it's a matter of we're not willing to give because we're worried that they won't like us or reject us, and then it's about us, then, you know, then it's a bit, it's not so strong.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Guru Maharaj, one question. To this point. But if we will take, for example, some sincere Christian priest who preach with a humble attitude that we need to be humble, who will be in the best position here, or a soft preacher who with a pride preaches Vedic.
Yes. The thing is that priest is it's a nice position, but it's still sentimental. So his humility then is proper, is good, and you know it's humility in connection with God and his representative. So in that way, it's good. But at the same time, as he doesn't actually know who he is, who God is, what's devotion, what actually is pure devotional service, and this and that. So he won't be able to actually himself necessarily keep him on the proper path. Just because you're humble, then you should know. But now, so while the other is proud, so it's only by coming in contact with, you know, those devotees that can give us the proper understanding of devotional service. Then we'll see is that both of them could advance nicely. But a devotee is always going to be better situated. Like Prabhupada said, a proper worshiper of Kali is in a better position than a proper worshiper of Christ, because he actually has guru, shastra, has sadhana, has all these things. You just have to show that it's not Kali, but it's Krishna, and then everything's nice. While the other one is that, you know, that print coming to the point of you know, they'll think of the cultural difference. They'll think of the shastra. They'll think all the things, guru, all these different things are all foreign to them. So all these religious principles are foreign to them. So they're not as well situated in religiousness. Though, you know, if they have that sincerity, then naturally they'll be able to pick up something, you know. But even in that position, because of the humility, you could teach them how pure devotional service is what you're trying to gain in their worship of the Lord, you know, through following the path that Christ gives. So then, seeing that, then they'll get more established. And then if they completely follow that, then nice. But then they have to know, because how do they express their love and devotion? Because that's not necessarily something so well expressed in these contemporary religions, you know, especially Christianity. You know, there's a little more detail on what to do with, you know, your life and everything in the Judaic and the Islamic. But in the Christian, they've kind of gotten rid of all the religious stuff. I think that was like you were talking about before. Nicaea, they removed a lot. I just saw the other day someone was writing, a paper that there's, you know, they did a paper and they were giving names and everything that how 15 books of the Bible were removed at that time. You don't see that in the, you know, the English translations and all, you know, but you see them in the Latin, but you don't see them in the English. So they removed 14 or 15 chapters because they feel that, you know, it's like, let's say Solomon, you know, who's a nice, you know, he's a nice person talking so much about God, and there's so many nice things that he says about God. But the Christians of that time thought that why we should be taking advice from this guy, because, you know, Solomon did so many weirdo things. You know, I think he had that point where I can't remember, was Bathsheba. Is that Solomon, and Bathsheba is connected with Solomon? Anybody knows? That somehow or another he got attracted by her. And then her husband, who was a commander in the army, he sent him out on the front lines in a, you know, very difficult
Father of Solomon.
Sorry?
King David, he was the father of Solomon.
Oh, that was David.
Yes, and his mother was this person. Mother of King Solomon was a beautiful girl, wife of some soldier, and he was sent by his father, King David, to the war to be killed.
Okay, so Solomon was David's son.
Yes.
Okay, so somehow or another in there, they decided that, you know, he's not up to the, you know, Christian squeaky clean standard. And so then they removed his prayers and, you know, anything else they do. So that would be the difficulty, is then so many aspects of the philosophy and all that will be removed. And that's what's removed when they translate from Latin into English and other languages. What about before that? What got counted as, you know, the original New Testament? Because they had so many things there, but they all get removed also. So it's just constantly, if somebody decides, oh, this is not good, then they just remove it. So that's the difficulty, is so much then philosophy, so much of the culture, so much of the practice gets lost. And so they leave it with just, yeah, if you have faith in Christ, then that's okay. But as we mentioned, the I think it was last time we were discussing that, I saw this, it was somebody was making a point. I don't remember the details, but it was they were talking with this imam, and then he was saying, okay, so of all people on the planet, who's going to get God's favor? Is it going to be the Jews, the Christians, or the Muslims? He said, only the Muslims, right? Everybody else goes to hell. Okay, he said, okay, so of the Muslims, then those who are following, the Sunni, the Shiite, and then I think there's a third major group, which one of them? And then he mentioned the one group. The other two are not going to get the blessing of God. Okay, then within that particular group, then there's these two parties. Which one of those? He mentioned one. Then of that group, then it has also these two parties. Which one of that? And it kept going down to it was basically the particular group that he was in his local area. He happened to be, the priest for, the mullah for in that area. And so his idea was, him and his crew, they're going to get the blessings of God, and all other Muslims, all the Christians, everybody else is not. So that's the difficulty that comes up if you start looking at it that way. You have to see is, what does the Shastra say? And that's going to be the thing, not just because you like this or like that, this one killed that one's, brother or cousin, and so therefore then that means that what happened between them, that's their business. We're supposed to follow the instructions. That's the Guru Varga. What goes on that level is not our business. And so then, you see that. So that was understood, you see, in the Judaic tradition, then in the Old Testament, then so many people make so many mistakes. But it goes on. It happens. It's life. You're practicing. You're trying to do what you can, and it happens. But the instructions still remain. The knowledge of God remains. It's not because he made a mistake. Now the absolute truth does not have any value anymore. The absolute position, it doesn't work. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that when you put too much on the sentiment, then it simply goes with the sentiment. I like this guy or don't like this guy. Because I don't like this guy, then therefore anything connected. And because he's connected to God, then therefore anything he says connected with God, or anything he would do connected with God, I won't do. And so that's very dangerous. It has to be is that, they're trying and they make mistakes, so don't make those mistakes. But everything else, if it's in line with the Shastra, what's the problem? So one has to be very careful that, yes, from your position you can apply, but you have to apply it to the descending process of pure devotional service and our relationship with God. Then they will advance in their position, whatever it is. And then if they can, go farther into pure devotion, then nice. And if not, however far they get, then next life will continue. Is that okay?
Yes.
Jagadish. Yes.
Another point, I think, it's the same point Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes, is that he says that Vedic is always progressive, while others are not as much. So it's a Kali Yuga religion, basically. It's just for that period of time, but it's not an eternal position.
Yes, because it won't go on. It means the principles on which it's based are eternal, but the actual manifestation of it's not. It is for that particular time. So if you can take those principles, you can make them work. But then the Vedic explains it so much more nicely, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's why we'll prefer that. In other words, if you're somebody who's committed to and is going to is dedicated to their position in these Abrahamic, then we're going to encourage them, from that platform of pure devotional service. But You know, but to be able to discuss beyond that and the further depths of what that means, then if they can handle that, we do. And if not, then we just leave it at how much they can do. But at least you're discussing trying to develop that pure love for God, you know, and seeing everything you do in relationship. I just saw the other day someone was saying that they were bringing out that you have, you know, in the Torah, it's talking about that, you know, that you should always be God conscious at all times, all places, all circumstances, you know, the Shema. And so then they're saying, you know, but that's a very difficult thing. So, you know, other things in the Bible we can, you know, kind of more focus on. So they're really losing the plot. It's not, no, that's the one you focus on, and whatever all these other things are to help you come to that platform. It's not that, you know, you do these other things and, you know, you eat your matzah bry and, you know, stuff like that. And that's going to be, you know, that's then the, you know, your you know, the pinnacle of Judaic, you know, expression, you know. So, no, it's that those are to help you remember God. Because the point is why matzah? Because they were traveling in the desert and so they couldn't leave the bread to rise. So they just made the dough and baked it. You know, or maybe they left it to rise, but walking around all day would always get flattened from, you know, not, you know, all the bumping and all that. But so they'd cook it later. It'd be, you know, a little bit more fluffy, but it would still be flat as a cracker, you know. And so then, you know, basically just if you make a matzah smaller in size and sprinkle some kosher salt on top, then they call it a cracker, a saline cracker, like that. You know, but or saltine, isn't it saltine cracker? Like that, yeah. So that's it. So it's just this, that. So even the Christians can remember, you know, the 40 years in Sinai whenever they eat their crackers with cheese on top, right? You know, so that's the thing, is that they're missing the plot. They're turning everything upside down. They're taking the essential and say, oh, that's too hard. Let's do something less, rather than. It's not that they're all equal. That's the thing. That's what you're trying to do. Everything else is to assist. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah, we're all good? Yeah, okay. Yes. So then please read some more.
Okay. So if one does so, let's see, what are we referring to? It is enjoined in the scriptures that one can relinquish all duties and surrender unto the devotional service of the Lord. So if one does so and becomes successful in the discharge of his devotional service unto the Lord, it is... by some temporary sentiment, and in the long run, due to so many other reasons, he falls down from the path of service by undesirable association. There are so many instances of this in the histories. Bharat Maharaj was obliged to take his birth as a stag due to his intimate attachment to a stag. He thought of this stag when he died. As such, in the next birth, he became a stag, although he did not forget the incident of his previous birth. Similarly, Chitraketu also fell due to his offenses at the feet of Shiva. But in spite of all this, the stress is given here even if there is a chance of falling down, because even though one falls down from the prescribed duties of devotional service, he will never forget the lotus feet of the Lord. Once engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, one will continue the service in all circumstances. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that even a small quantity of devotional service can save one from the most dangerous position. There are many instances of such examples in history. Ajamil is one of them. Ajamil in his early life was a devotee, but in his youth he fell down. Still, he was saved by the Lord at the end. End quote.
Yes, so they're pointing out the glory of devotional service is that that always continues on, while anything else doesn't continue on. Because the point is only devotional service will come and what do you call it? How you say? Open the door, like that. Everything else, you know, doesn't. It doesn't come forward. Nothing else other than devotional service, you know, it carries on. So everything else, whatever benefits you've got, because see, you have a mentality. From that mentality and understanding, you perform an action. The action gets you result. So the mentality will go with you to next life, but that the results on those actions don't. You know, not that you got this life. Whatever actions would carry over to this life, the results that you may get. But the point is it's the mentality that goes on. So if the mentality is not right, then that's where you're going to be situated. So only devotional service then carries on properly, because then that one is the proper mentality for the living entity. All other things are false identities, that I'm a member of the Varna Ashram, that I'm a tapasvi, I'm a scholar, you know, I'm a wealthy person, I'm, you know, I give in charity. You know, like Karna, he was famous for giving in charity. It was an identity for him. You know, therefore, because of that, then when Indra came to ask for his armor, you know, that he was born with, then he gave it. Because, you know, then what a charitable act. You know, and he is known for charity. Who can say they can give that kind of charity? You know, so then he was willing to give. He was happy to give, because he would just become so much more, you know, known for his within the context of his identity. And that, and so these kind of things become the identity, and then as Jagadish Prabhu points out, then that pride can come up. Because when you're dealing, oh, we're good at this, oh, I can do like this, oh, I've got, you know, like with the yoga, you know, I can do this asana, or I can sit for this long and meditate, I got this much of a beard, and I got this much of a top knot, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and you see, it's just all the same kind of jazz, you know, it's kind of like, you know, hey, you know, we had those as kids, what's the big deal? We weren't even yogis, you know, so, you know, so why we have to be very careful that we're very clear that pure devotional service, you know, coming in the line of the acharyas, is the only thing of value. And anything else only has a value in as much as it connects to and supports, you know, connects, you know, in a recommended way and supports that process. Otherwise, it doesn't have any real meaning. Yes? No? Any good? Okay. Yes, please. Jagadish, something more? No? Okay.
Guru Maharaj, I have one doubt. I remember now one Christian saint, her name was Saint Teresa from Avila, and she described 7 levels how to attain a vision of God as a person, as a, in human form.
Right.
And she just understand we are soul, and second step to be completely humble and to understand our dependence on him. And then he told all other steps will be. And I think if we will compare her with some, for example, proud, smart Brahman, who will be more dear to God?
Is dear is that you're God conscious. So what we're mentioning is that you're God conscious, then that's there. The same time as you have to see is the smartest are nicely situated because they have faith in scripture. They're following the scripture. You know, they do everything very, very properly. And that situation is favorable for going back, you know, for use by devotees. Now it's just a matter of connecting it to Krishna. So the thing is, you know, is she, you know, she says these things, but is she attaining it? She says these are the steps. So is she attaining that? And, you know, if she does, it's nice, good. But it's not that it has to be this or that. But the point is being situated nicely in, you know, who's her guru, right? You know, what's the different aspects that are there, the sadhana. So she's giving some ideas. That's her expectation and all that. And so then, okay, that's nice. But now, are those 7 steps accepted by by the church? You know, do they say that, yes, this is the process? Is she, you know, in that good standing, or is she just as a saint, but don't get too much in that way? You know, if people are following that, you know, then is there a branch of Catholicism that practices what she says, you know? You know,
they
just like
a branch of name, but they don't completely follow because it was changed after some time.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that she may get the benefit, but the point is, you know, it's nice. It's you'll get some benefit. Anything connected with devotional service is there. But the point that Prabhupada's making is that you're situated in the religious and you have some idea of the philosophy. It's not complete. The smarta, his idea of the philosophy in that is probably even greater than that of any Christian or, you know, any from the Abrahamic tradition. You know, his, you know, following and all this and that is, you know, very nice. You'd have to find some very, very orthodox or personalities who, you know, very nicely follow all the different rules. So, but the thing is the rules, as I said, are not specific for that particular place or time, but they are the rules for the universe, you know. Then in the practice is that, now if you can just add Krishna consciousness, is perfect. Let's say, which would be better? A person is sitting in the temple room and completely distracted about thinking about what's going on at home and this and that and all, but he's in the temple room, you know, and that. Or someone who's outside and trying to think of the Lord and all that while they're moving around to all these situations that aren't favorable. So, yes, it's nice if they're thinking, but how much do they know? While the other one, if he's in the temple and you just, you know, say, oh, it's time for arti, then they're fully absorbed. It's just that the situation is good. That's what we're trying to say. The point is that she is doing this, is that that's the example. Yes, you should be trying to see God. You start with humility. You start with these, because why humility? Jesus said, you know, the one who's humble, he's going to attain the kingdom of God, not someone else. You know, so these are the things, is you're looking at it from that angle. You don't have to compare them on that level. It's not that then you compare everything. It's not like the two guys, you know, two good friends, you know, driving in the car. And, you know, and they always come up with that, you know, which is better, this or that. And each one is more terrible than the other. And then, you know, someone's got to say, well, it's this, you know, oh, you're disgusting. Or why that? Why not? You know, it's just something to talk about. So the point is that's not the point. The point is about the pure devotional service. So if one has an idea, that's good. But now whether her seven-step program is going to be solid and everything like that, and, you know, I guess for their seven-step program, oh, no, it's a 12-step, the other one. You get a coin for that. This one's seven-step, you get a cross in your pocket, right? You know, that you can. So the point is it's good in that she is seeing that aspect of trying to see God. And that's nice. So that's a good thing. You take that. That's a good thing. And the smarta, because they're following all these principles that are given in the Shastra and everything, that's a good thing. You know, you take what's good. What's weak about it is, you know, you have to take that, you know, and see that, okay, how can we improve that? So for the smarta, you add Krishna. They're so stable. Like I've seen devotees that, smart to background, they're always thinking about the philosophy, always this and that. They're slow to be convinced. Even though devotees, you know, about certain things. I've had devotees come, they're smart as, you know, the Shaivites and all that. And in the class, then they're always coming back. Anything you come up and talk about the glory of Shiva, immediately, so then is, you know, immediately they're, you know, so it's not completely, you know. And so, but after years, then you see, no, and then they become so solid. Because they don't doubt scripture, because you show scripture, they don't doubt it. You show with the acharya, they don't doubt it. And so that's their strength. You know, because, so it's Shastra says, therefore they're going to do it. Others, then they, you know, they get an attachment to this or that or new age or this or that. You say Shastra and, well, you know, that's there, but, you know, time, place, circumstance, you know, they try to wiggle out of it. But the smartest don't. They know you get up at this time of the morning, you know, if you like to or not. You go to bed at this time, you chant your rounds, you do your yajna, you do your puja, you do your this, you do your that. They just do it. And so in that way, it's very regulated and very good like that. And then with time, you see, then they become, as they become purified, and then they start doing it because they have that attraction, attachment, then they're very solid devotees. You know, at the same time, if they come from a background where they don't care about these things, it's all sentimental, then as long as the sentiment is good, then they're you know, enthusiastic. But if something disturbs that sentiment, they can't function. And so that's the difficulty, is that, no, because Shastra says devotional service, you know, so if something's going wrong and, you know, somebody said something to me I didn't like, doesn't mean devotional service is bad. It just means that they didn't act in a proper way. And at the same time as how I responded to it, I'm not that advanced either. That's why I'm disturbed by it. Otherwise, I'm more advanced. Who cares? You know, so Sukadev Goswami didn't care what they were saying. You know, so then it's just a matter of you have that faith, you're nicely situated. That's the thing. So Mother Teresa, maybe, or Saint Teresa or whatever it is, she may be nicely situated, but, you know, it's something at some point she can maybe get distracted, while the others are nicely situated and they generally they're distracted from devotional service. But once you put them on that, then they get established, because for them is you have to live the philosophy. You have to follow Shastra. You have to follow Guru. It's just, there's no questions. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you.
Yes, okay. What are we on time? Okay, yes, very good. Okay, please.
So back to Srila Jiva Goswami.
Yes.
Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary says, quote, "Now only bhakti to the Lord, without caring for steady practice, is one's dharma with nitya and naimittika activities is taught. That is expressed in this verse. A person may argue that if one perfects bhakti by worshipping and giving up one's dharma, there is no worry. However, if one does not perfect bhakti and dies or falls from bhakti, then one will be worthless because of giving up one's dharma. However, one should not worry that one will become worthless if one falls from the path or dies without completing the process, since the person with a taste for bhakti is no longer qualified for karma. Even if he falls or does not complete bhakti, will he have the misfortune, abhadram, of taking a low birth? He will not. The word va indicates that this is impossible. That is because he has impressions of bhakti. On the other hand, what is attained by those who perform only their dharma, what is attained by those who perform only their dharma and do not worship the Lord?" End quote. Narad Muni, yeah. Thus to Vyasa.
Go ahead.
That's it.
Okay, so that ends that anucheda. Yes, so... he's just reiterating this point, you know, he's giving that Sridhar Swami is making this statement there, is that you perform bhakti, giving up all other duties, then there's no loss. But if you perform your duties and don't take up bhakti, what's the gain? So there's no loss there that, oh, what about this and that? We have to be practical and, oh, we're not on that platform and all this kind of, you know, all these kind of arguments that come up. But the reality is that bhakti includes everything else, you know, favorable activities for the Lord, favorable knowledge for the Lord, all those things are naturally included. So whatever is actually of reality in karma or jnana is originally from bhakti. So in other words, what is of importance in you know, of knowledge within bhakti, that is the essential point of jnana. What is the essential activities, you know, within bhakti? You know, it means the activities of bhakti, the favorable activities, those are the essential points within karma. And then the detail expands from there. So therefore, the point of all the rules and regulations of karma or jnana is simply to get you to those essential points that are inherent in bhakti. So if you're performing bhakti under the direction of the guru, you're already performing those activities of karma and jnana. We know knowledge of Krishna. We know about detachment from the material world. We know about engaging the body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord. And so that's the essence of karma and jnana together. So then what is lacking? And so then you just find what things you can keep yourself busy in. And that's then the art, is that to see what am I absorbed in, and engage yourself, you know, like that. And also then in leadership is okay, of all these activities, which ones this particular person excels in that they're able to be Krishna conscious. And so then that's how you then direct them and engage them. So from ourselves, we're trying to understand, and from the position of leadership, they're trying to understand and engage us. And this from both sides, then, you know, it should come out all right. Does that make sense? So there's no loss. Bhakti already includes. There's nothing left out. That's the whole point. There's nothing left out. And if you think it's something separate, you've already missed the point. Oh, we have to be practical, you know, we have to have jobs, we have to make money. That means you missed the point. Is that money belongs to Krishna. The process by which you can get money is coming from Krishna. That you can use money and get things, that's coming from Krishna. The things that you get, that you seem to require, that comes from Krishna. And that those, they fulfill those needs, that also comes from Krishna. So what's not connected to Krishna? But you have to see it that way, then it works. Yes? Like that? Okay, we good? Everybody happy? Okay. Okay, so then we'll end here. Jai Ho. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.